Good afternoon. I'd like to welcome everyone to this special meeting of the Commonwealth Transportation Board here on February the 13th, a Friday. We hope that's good luck. Our original intent was to schedule for adoption the reduction in the six-year program for next Thursday. As most of you know, we have been holding public hearings since late October and through November and December with presentations about the very dramatic decline in our transportation revenues. As is the case with the state general fund budget, we do have a requirement in transportation that revenues equal expenditures, that we have a balanced budget. And so the purpose of this exercise, after I believe there were six separate public hearings, after two separate revenue reforecasts, it is our obligation to bring revenues and expenditures into line. And what that means in the context of this draft six-year program before you is approximately a $2 billion reduction in highway construction over the next 6 years, a very modest and slight increase in the areas of transit and rail. Also within that, a very critical issue, which is the maintenance of our pavements and our bridges, which is, when you look at this program going forward, and you'll be hearing more detailed presentations on this in a little bit, is that we are unable to afford the historic escalation, which has been about 4% a year in highway maintenance. And I know the commissioner is going to want to address that. That is a very strong and succinct statement about where this program is in our ability to afford new construction, which has been quite a while since we've been able to do that. But now our maintenance and operating revenues are being constrained as well. So the purpose of this meeting today is first and foremost to take public comment. We'll get individual presentations on the six-year program proposed revisions, as well as the individual budgets of the Department of Rail and Public Transportation and VDOT, and then we'll have a roundtable discussion and action to follow on that. In summary, I'd like to say that the historic work that has been done over the last couple of months represent an unprecedented shrinkage in our transportation investments. The movement of this very important meeting, advancing it by 6 days, we'll learn when we get the presentation on the stimulus package, is necessary in order to qualify us for those stimulus funds. We do not believe, in fact we know, that the stimulus funds will not offset all of the cuts, but they may help to mitigate some of those cuts. With that, I'd like to, as is our custom, open up with public comment. I know that Senator Roscoe Reynolds is here and wanted to address the board. Senator, I want to thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule coming to address us. We look forward to your remarks.
Mr. Secretary, Mr. Commissioner, members of the board, I want to thank you for, first of all, your service to the people of the Commonwealth. I learn every day while I'm up here the importance of brevity, and I will try to be very brief, but the matter that I want to talk with you about is incredibly important to the people that I represent, and I know many of you will not be surprised to learn that it has to do with Route 58 and the stimulus money. I know that's not what you're meeting about today, but I want to take this opportunity to make a special plea to you for that. Presently, from I-77 to the coast in an easterly direction, the missing link is the area between Hillsville and Stewart that remains, for the most part, single-laned as opposed to four-lane. I'm here to ask you for as much consideration as you possibly can give to considering that area for construction from the stimulus money once the details are to you about that. The reason that I argue as strongly for that as I do is that once that missing link is complete, you will see tractor-trailer traffic that is presently on I-77 and I-81 and I-64 make that trip on Route 58, and that will provide a great service to the complaints that you hear from citizens who use I-77, I-81, and I-64 about the tractor-trailer traffic on that area. The other area that I would like to mention to you, and I think you have received correspondence from me about this in the past, has to do with once the Hillsville bypass around Hillsville is completed. A short distance from there is a secondary route, and I think it's route 669, but I get it confused. It's either 699 or 669. They call it up there the 669 connector. That route connects to 100. And what will happen if you're traveling north on I-77, when you get to the 58 intersection, you'll head east. You'll take the 58 bypass, get on route 669, connect with 100, and then connect up with 81 off of 100. When the bypass is finished, there's going to be a tremendous amount of traffic that will take that route. If you properly construct that connector route and make the improvements that need to be on 100, then traffic can efficiently move. If you're going north on 77, headed 81, you will avoid some of the ups and downs on 77, avoid the congestion that presently accumulates at the intersection of 77 and 81, and actually save considerable time by connecting to 81 off Route 100. Likewise, if you're headed down 81, instead of going down to 77 and then headed south on 77, you'll get off on 100, take 669, take the bypass 58, and save traveling that way. Not only would it make our economy better, our area is suffering from the highest unemployment in the state. Martinsville leads the unemployment rate in the Commonwealth of Virginia. Transportation construction jobs are very good jobs, and as I understand it, there are projects along the Route 669 connector and Route 58 connector that are ready to go if money is available. On behalf of the people that I represent, I beg of you to give consideration to using stimulus money, if it's available, for Route 58 and for Route 669 connector. And thank you very much for giving me the courtesy of speaking before you today. I'm grateful to you for the opportunity. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Please come back anytime.
I will. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's see. Mark Rickards. Welcome, Mr. Rickards.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary and Commissioners. Mr. Badger, privileged to be here today. First of all, I want to thank you all for the support in the past. And when I travel around the country and look at other transit systems and the support from their states, respective states, sometimes it's not as good as the Commonwealth. So, again, I appreciate it. I represent the Williamsburg Transit Authority, formerly Williamsburg Transport, and we're the transit service for the city of Williamsburg, James City County, York County, Colonial Williamsburg, which is a unique part of our transit authority, being a public-private partner, and the College of William & Mary. So we just got started about a year and a half ago, and we're thankful for the funding, but we see a big problem with our recent cut in our FY09 budget and the projected cuts in operating assistance, which is formerly known as formula, for our transit funds for FY10. This is a lifeline for our people who use public transit in our area. A recent survey showed about 77% of our ridership, which, by the way, is about 3 million now, if you combine all our services annually, are dependent on the transit. This is the way they get around the area. This is the way they get to the jobs, to the hospital, shopping. And, of course, in today's economy, getting people out to the stores is very important. So we are looking to maintain this, and if we have to, whether these cuts, whether it's 10 million statewide or 100,000 for us, we have to go to the local governments. They're telling us they can't do it this year for reasons you all know. So we have to either look at service cuts and we have to look at fare increases. Well, fare increases are not the answer, so hopefully we can patch together the best program we can with what we have. But I'm asking your help, if not today, in the future, to look out for transit operating assistance. It's a key to what we're trying to do to serve the public. And the economic stimulus package, we hear good things about transit. There's $8.4 billion in there for transit nationwide. But again, we don't know how much of that we can use for operating. We have a good surplus of capital. We may get more, and that will help. But we do need operating. So that's my message, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Mr. Rickards. Anybody else want to address the board?
Okay, hearing none, we're going to dive right into the agenda. Let me suggest, because of the importance of these issues, we'll do these two presentations and focus on both the six-year program and the budget reductions. Since we are in the business agenda, we can take a vote on those after we've had discussions on those items. Then I'd like to add two items under new business. Dr. Mary Lynn Tischer has a little bit of an update on the stimulus package and a presentation, and we may want to have a brief discussion about the General Assembly budget and actions. I don't think there are major issues there, but I know a couple members have indicated desire to talk about those issues, if that's acceptable to all. Okay, Ms. Buescher and Mr. Pittard. The first item is an overview of the revised six-year program.
Get me in. This is going to be brief. As you all know, it's basically been a week since I presented the revised six-year program to you. At this point, we are still sitting on revenue reductions of $2.6 billion. And as you know, the original 09 budget had already incorporated the $1.1 billion, the first phase of revenue reductions, and we've since had three in total, the 1-1, and then the last two for a total of for 2.6. I didn't do that very well. The next slide is exactly what I showed you last week for both rail and public transportation and highway. Highway experienced 2.0 billion dollar reduction, and rail and public transportation went up slightly. So the program went from 10.6 billion to 8.9 billion in the revision. For highway construction, I just provided the same slide that I had last week that shows the reductions by system and by other funding areas, federal maintenance, MPO, safety enhancements, et cetera, to show you the breakdown of the $6 billion for highway. Again, that did not change. And to just show you again the summary of the revised highway program projects that we reduced funding on, this dropped by one. There was a miscount on the secondary and urban system, so we had 41 interstate, 89 primary, 547 secondary, and 131 urban for a total of 808 projects. And that is the end of the presentation. The project cut lists are the same. Yes, sir.
Mr. White. Rita. At the last meeting, we talked briefly about the next revenue projection,
yes,
which I think is next week. Is that right?
That's my understanding from today's paper.
Could you comment on what effect, if any, we anticipated having on our six-year plan? And specifically, will we need to revise it once again if those projections go down?
I'll be perfectly honest. At this point, I've had no indication of any changes to the transportation component of the revenue estimates. I know they're looking at general fund components, especially related to sales tax. That doesn't mean we might not be impacted, but at this point, I have no information as to what that might look like next week.
Mr. White, I think also, too, this has been such an ongoing and painful process, unless it's very dramatic, and we know there will be changes, some up, some down, that those would be incorporated into the regular update that would occur in June. I hope everyone keeps the 19th still on their calendars for the meeting. If there's something dramatic, look, we're in free fall revenue time. Hopefully we don't experience that yet again, but we do need to be prepared for that contingency. So Mr. White's question is an important one. There is a chance, albeit small, but there is a chance that we may be back here again next week to further reduce revenues. Mr. Krulnick.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I have a question about, since our last meeting we had the opportunity, some of us made comments, others didn't, on last week's presentation and the plan that we were given at that time. Were there any revisions made to the program as a result of those comments or adjustments that we should know about?
No, sir.
Okay.
Some of the comments might be able to be incorporated in the update for the 10 through 15 program.
Thank you. Also, I wanted to observe that while the transit and rail part of the budget, I think everyone would be thrilled that it was 33% of the total budget if that was a big goal. Unfortunately, we have a 4-inch pie plate, not a 9-inch pie plate that we're talking about at the moment. But I just want to understand the revenue sources that support highway construction and public transportation are largely separate. Is that correct? Those are separate funds and...
Yes.
So I know some of you may have received similar calls. Can't you move money around within those accounts? And I just wanted to say that actually we have a fairly rigid formula that we work with from the legislature, and then we have our own formulas that govern virtually all the money, I would say. The final thing is, I know part of our purpose in being here today is to take the shape we need to take to be able to match up with what we think the shape of the stimulus bill will be. My question is, are there some holes that we already can spot that we can't figure out a way to shape to get, or are we in good shape to really capture as much of what the stimulus bill tells us is available?
I believe we're in good shape to capture what the stimulus package will offer us.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Pitter, did you have a presentation?
Any
questions, Mr. Pitter?
Mr. Chairman, I know we're all concerned about, we're pleased that transit and rail did do well relatively, although the pie is nowhere near the size it should be. Again, the operating funds, as we just heard a speaker refer to the gap that we have in supporting the transit systems that are hoping to grow at this time and probably can't because of the constraints of operating funds. I guess what I'm asking you is that we're sure we have maxed out on those operating support that we can provide.
Yes, we have pretty much it's dictated in the code, the allocation methodology. We also went through and swept $4 million on unobligated balances and $1.4 million roughly of our own administrative budget to put into operating, which was allowed under those provisions. So from that perspective, there is no provision currently under the code. It allocates 73.5% to operating and 25% to capital, and we have to follow that and make those allocations under those provisions. That's what we've done.
Thank you. And well, thank you for the staff for taking that administrative money and applying it to the operating.
Ms. Coleman.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to follow that up again. I think we're sort of asking some of the same questions. As we make adjustments later in the year, would there be an opportunity, for example, to add operating funds back, or if not for FY09, for FY10?
Essentially, all new revenues have to follow that formula.
Yes.
The only play in the formula is the 1.5% funds that go to special programs, and we're already looking in the current year, in 09, we cut certain of those allocations from MAID to DRPT. We cut all of those programs to get to the required reduction. We're already internally discussing that for 10, we may take that 1.5% and move it to operate. But it's the decision y'all would have to make ultimately, but it's a discussion we're having about potentially recommending that. Other than that, there really isn't any play. When the revenue comes in, it has to go through that formula.
And one final question. On this topic, I think this is a live legislative issue, so we may want to have this particular discussion when we get to the legislative update.
Okay. May I just ask one other question, Mr. Chairman? Are the definitions that we use for operating and capital budgets, are they completely congruent with the federal definitions of those things? Or do we have our own definition and they have their own definition?
We generally follow the federal definition. The only place where there is some gray area would be something called preventive maintenance, where the federal government allows you to call, in certain instances, that capital related, and maintenance generally outside of that definition is generally an operating activity. So there's a little bit of play there, but
thank you. Okay. Any other questions? If not, let's get the second presentation, which is directly related, and the same presenters on the budget documents. And it's important to note this is just the revision to the FY09 budget, and I believe the DRPT budget is unchanged. Is that correct for FY09? It did. Okay.
And in this case, we have two separate presentations. I think you all have seen the bullets on this slide, and I've used them many times in the last few weeks. But again, this is still reflective of the $2.6 billion in revenue reduction since June. When we normally adopt a new budget, we look and we start out with the Commonwealth Transportation Fund revenue summary. So what we show you here today is the adopted numbers in the first column of each of the years. You've got 2009, adopted, revised, the difference, 2010, adopted, revised, the difference, and then we've combined 11 through 14. The difference in this slide than what you've seen before is that we have at this point revised what we call our other financing sources or the capital improvement bonds. We've revised them downward approximately $340 million over the six-year period. We had indicated that we were not able to sell bonds until the end, House Bill 3202 bonds until the end of fiscal 10. So we've revised numbers in the construction program, and since that's been finalized, we've now reflected the appropriate level of bonding as a resource on this chart. So your $2.6 billion reduction is still here when you look at the total revenue line. Then if you deduct the reduction in bonds, we had a total reduction of $2.9 billion over the 6 years. When you look at this revenue summary also, and I'll get down to VDOT's portion of this budget, VDOT's portion of the revised 09 Commonwealth Transportation Fund budget is approximately $3.5 billion. DRPTs is approximately $700 million, and ports and aviation are also included in this, at ports at $37 million and aviation at $19 million. So that's the use of your total Commonwealth Transportation Fund revenue summary of $4.2 billion for revised 9.
Chair, in the case of the reduction in the improvement bonds,
yes.
Does that render about or does it take about all of the anticipated revenue that 3202 was supposed to yield in the future funding of transportation? Is that safe to say that, that we don't have anything left out of the bill that they passed last year?
In the six-year construction program, we do have approximately $1.6 billion of the House Bill 3202 bonds programmed. And we do hope to sell those when we have the bonding capacity and insurance premium revenue available to support that. So we do have that going forward. We just will not be able, at this forecasting period, we don't see ourselves being able to issue the $3.3 billion authorized. We're probably looking at $2.2 billion over 10 years. So it does go beyond the six-year horizon.
Mr. Chairman, I would observe from my colleague as well that in a couple of cases, local governments have taken advantage of the permission to raise commercial property tax rates to support transportation. So that's one residual as well.
Okay, any other questions?
This next slide shows the allocation summary for the Commonwealth Transportation Fund. And we start off with debt service, funding and transfers to other agencies, the maintenance program, which we'll talk about a little bit more. The reduction in debt service is the result of the decline in insurance premium revenue. And the other agencies and transfers declined. There was a reduction in the amount that we transferred to DMV related to capital projects. They chose not to go forward with several capital projects. And we'll talk in a few minutes about the reductions in highway maintenance and operations of approximately, in 09, of approximately $162.6 million or $390 million over the six-year period. And that is due to the reduction in HMOF revenues that we've that make up a portion of the 2.6 total revenue reduction. Public transportation and rail in this scenario dropped $100 million in fiscal year 9 and increased approximately $200 million through the 6 years. Ports and aviation dropped slightly, and again, those are operations reductions due to the reduction in revenues. And the earmarks and highway systems construction dollars over the 6 years declined $1.4 billion, of which you see $85 million in 09. When you combine the 59 from the earmarks and the $85 million in 09, the difference in those two categories, that's the entire construction reduction for us in 09 of $157 million, and I'll show you where that breaks down in a few minutes. We thought we would show the 09 portion of the Commonwealth Transportation Fund budget in a little different format, since we wanted to show you the comparison to the 09 approved to the revised 09. Debt service remained in terms of a percentage of the total at 6%, other agencies and transfers approximately 1%. Highway and maintenance, oddly enough, at 36%. Tolls, admin, and other programs increased slightly. Public transportation and rail is at 18%. I believe when we talked before, presented the budget back in June, we had talked about the fact that the budget for public transportation and rail back in 1999 was 5% of the total, and we are still we can see the effort in the increase in funding for public transportation and rail, and even with the slight reduction, it's holding at 18%. Ports and aviation, still at approximately 1%. Earmarks and special financing dropped to 6%, and that's mainly the reduction of bonds on projects. And then highway construction at 21%, even though there is a decline of approximately $452 million in the total Commonwealth Transportation Fund for 2009. To narrow the focus down to the revised 2009 budget for VDOT, as I briefly mentioned a moment ago, VDOT budget reduction for fiscal year 2009 totaled approximately $347 million, or about 9% overall. And reductions occurred in the following areas, and you're well aware of the six-year program reductions. But we also had budget reductions in the organizational and staffing area and services and programs. We'll talk about a little bit of that in a few minutes and more of that in next week's board meeting. And as I mentioned, the construction program in 2009 was reduced approximately $147 million. An additional $200 million came from the administrative and maintenance areas as provided by the districts and chiefs. And when I say that, because we had to do a mid-year revision to our 2009 budget, both the operations and the construction side, we had to perform what I'll call a balancing. We had to look at what funds were still remaining that were unspent throughout the budget. So these are just areas that we felt that over the last 6 months of this fiscal year, we could reduce spending, whether it was in contracts or operations, security services, or various things at the district and at the chief, in the directorates of each of the chiefs. We provided a list of cuts that we could make to balance out the budget on both the maintenance and the administration side in addition to the construction program. And specifically, the maintenance program, which I'll talk about a little bit more in a minute, sustained a good part of that reduction, going from $1.35 billion to $1.19 billion in 2009. Now, this is how the VDOT revised budget of $3.45 billion breaks down by program area. When you look at environmental monitoring, we reduced some funding in the wetlands banking area. We had position vacancies that contributed to savings. Planning and research, some discretionary dollars were available there. Toll facilities, we had reduced interest earnings, reduced insurance premiums for the non-toll debt service. And as I mentioned before, in the administrative area, we had vacancy savings, we reduced training and travel, we reduced some wage and temporary service dollars. We postponed or reduced facility and grounds maintenance, fence repairs, that sort of thing. And we did reduce the level of security services in the administration areas. So what you see on your slide results in a total of $346.5 million in reductions. And I do want to focus on the two largest areas, which is construction and maintenance, on the next couple of slides. The construction budget, as I said, was reduced $146.7 million in 2009. All areas were not untouched, interstate, primary, secondary, and urban. Also, the dedicated and statewide construction area was reduced approximately $59 million. Part of what that encompasses is us actually reducing the amount of bond proceeds on projects, statewide projects of significance, because we're not able to sell the bonds and we still must keep bond proceeds on the match, the federal match projects, but in terms of statewide projects, we reduced the bonds on those for approximately $59 million. And then the construction management program and some admin costs, we reduced $2.3 million in 2009. On the maintenance side, approximately $162.6 million in total. In 2009, the maintenance payments to cities and towns was not impacted because we were mid-year and we had been making those payments quarterly. We did not believe it was appropriate to look at a reduction in 2009 in maintenance payments. So what you'll see when we start talking about the 10 through the remaining or out years of our budget view next week, you'll see that those reductions were started in 10 through 14. As the Secretary had indicated, we've reduced our maintenance budget growth from 4% to 3%, and you'll see that also reflected in the locality payments. So what we did for VDOT, we unfortunately did have to do also for the locality payments, but not in 2009. Some of the maintenance reductions in terms of balancing 2009 came from what we call the asset investment portion of the maintenance budget, approximately $81 million. Some pavement reductions, bridge maintenance reductions. We eliminated a project that we were looking at where we would have statewide interstate system signs and stripes, a new effort in that arena, and we reduced that. Some statewide operational improvements at about $12 million. And as we've mentioned before, in some of the blueprint discussions, there was $10 million set aside for a ferry replacement, and we're unable to do that. So that's $10 million of the reduction on the asset investment side. We also had approximately $81 million in reductions in the routine maintenance and service side. We reduced our contingency and reserve category. We've reduced some roadside maintenance services such as mowing and tree trimming. And we have reduced the replacement of equipment. So we've reduced our equipment purchases approximately $4.6 million. So in summary, to look at the maintenance budget from a different perspective, we've broken it into the two components of the VDOT portion, the asset investment side in terms of the approved budget and the revised, and then the routine maintenance and services. And 409, they took about a 50% hit, about 81. That concludes the VDOT portion of the budget, the presentation for 09. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, I want to highlight the significance of the work the staff has done in the presentation that you've just seen, and I want to bring a couple of items of perspective for you, because next week, when I start to talk to you about the outlook for 10 to 14 decision options that we will be faced with, I want to highlight some things that Ms. Buescher laid on the table for you. The budget reduction that you see in our maintenance and operating budget brings us back to equivalence of the budget I had when I came here in 2006. But I want to say that again. The budget reduction that we've accommodated would be as if I were starting fiscal year 2007 all over again, with one exception. Prices have gone up. second point I need to highlight is I want on page 14, and as she laid out what the staff has done since last November to accommodate this declining revenue. Most of what you see in those changes are one-time kinds of changes. They are not sustainable over time. In other words, the decision to not replace $4.6 million worth of equipment is a one-time decision. The decision not to replace the ferry that we had been building up for is a one-time decision. So it does not repeat as we go forward. The third point, and very frankly, the staff has done a brilliant job since last November finding and readjusting and making those kinds of crisis changes that they needed to make in order to get us to come in balanced. The second point I want to, or the last point I want to highlight is on page 14 of the slide set. I think it's the one that you've got right there. As you look at our discussions and get ready for our discussions about 10 through 14, the number that we begin with is how do we achieve a permanent and sustained reduction from 1.349, not from 1.186, because of those one-time decisions that we were able to make this year to get us to fiscal year 10. So that will be the focus of as we set the base for 10 through 14 now. My staff and I will be talking to you from that base of 1.349 and how do you sustain the next set of reductions that we will absorb as we move forward. So this is a lot of good work by a lot of people across the department to get us to this. But it also sets the stage for what is entailed in the blueprints that I have outlined for you for the department around staffing, organization, and the services choices that we will have as we move forward. Appreciate that.
I know we appreciate also the difficulty of the choices before us, and at the appropriate time, Commissioner, I'm going to ask you to recognize your staff. We've got a little bit to go through before we get to that, but there's a ton of weekend work, night work on this, and I know everyone's been inconvenienced having you come down here on such short notice, but the staff, particularly within VDOT, a little bit within DRPT, have been really pushed to the limit, and we do want to recognize that at the appropriate time. Other questions of Ms. Buescher? This is about the VDOT, just FY09 budget. Yes, sir.
Mr. Secretary, just for some clarification, and maybe I'll start with a rhetorical question. How many of our districts run ferries?
I'm sorry?
How many of our districts have ferries that are running them?
Three? Two?
Three?
Three. I think it's three.
Oh, it's three, yeah.
There's one in Charlottesville.
Cool. But this replacement is for where?
Hampton Road.
Hampton Roads, the Jamestown Scotland?
Yes.
What will that do ultimately to service?
Mr. Witt, can I suggest on that issue, we're going to have an explicit discussion next week about levels of service. This is folded into that for ferries, for rest areas, for mowing, a whole suite of services that we'll have to look at.
My point is that yes, for some of those others that you talked about, it is overall service. A ferry is no different than a bridge, in that we're talking about traffic moving across an area. I'm just trying to get a understanding as we approve this as to it would be no different than in a construction plan, us talking about closing another bridge or reducing lane traffic or that sort of.
If I might, Ms. Buescher, is the ferry in FY10 or FY09? It is in FY09. Okay. That's a fair concern. and it is a, it obviously is a replacement boat, and like any project, theoretically could be moved out to FY 10, 11 years on. So I think there are things that we just have to do in FY 09. You raise a very legitimate question about what will be the impact on that. I do think, though, the right place for that discussion is in the context of the FY 10 budget, and which we'll currently schedule for next week, and we will have to look at both service levels as well as, you properly point out, capital replacement, because that's an essential component to when it is an essential service, that is an essential component.
Mr. Secretary, I accept that. And again, my reason for questioning is this is the 09 budget. The commissioner just said that you know, these items are going by the wayside and we still need to cut next year. So it's, the outlook is bleak. And what we're talking about then is in an area that, or a facility that's serving a rural area, we are facing another level of service cut in order to move people from one region to another, you know, across a body of water. I just want to get my hands around it. So thank you.
Appropriately raised, and I guarantee you there'll be at least a dozen more issues like that next week.
Thank you.
Ms. Kuhlman.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Ms. Buescher, you or the commissioner both might have a comment about this. How were the reductions in management and staff coordinated with the reductions in programs and services? Was it a percentage ratio thing, or you worked both numbers and then tried to make them add up, or?
Not in 09. That, the commissioner will be speaking to that next week in terms of blueprint for 10 through 14. 09, as I indicated, was more of a, we need to balance 09 mid-year. Where can we find savings to get us to that point? And not having a lot of time to do a lot of analysis in terms of service levels or programs. So what we asked staff to do was look at vacancy savings and where there was available dollars due to someone, a position being vacant for 6 months out of the year or currently vacant, they offered up vacancy savings, and we've gone through a critical hire process where we're looking at each position in terms of need for filling going forward. So it was just the dollars that were available as turnover savings in the individual budgets or programs that the district administrators and the chief could put into the pot.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I may, Ms. Buescher's being very kind in her characterizations. I did three things that were directed across the staff. First, salary pay raises were deferred that were scheduled to go into effect in November. Second, we put in a very draconian critical hiring process. So wherever there were vacancies, they were reviewed. I have swept up all vacancies within the department. They are now under the control of the commissioner's office and managed by the deputy commissioner. Third, we terminated and downscaled all those services, and she highlighted some across the department that dealt with things like temporary services, the security staff that monitors the building. You can notice it out in front. Your only access to this complex now is through the tower. We used to have three guard points that were access points. Those savings amount to somewhere in the neighborhood of $600,000 a year. So it is that kind of measure that's been put in place. We have controlled all other kinds of personnel spending as we could find it throughout the Commonwealth.
But we're still safe, right?
You are absolutely. Our bridge inspection program is solid.
I've just observed that people without resources aren't the ones usually that get robbed. So this would be the last place they would hit.
Okay, other questions of Ms. Buescher? I think what the Commissioner and Ms. Buescher said, very important. The budget before you is just FY09, and you've got to do what you've got to do when you're trying to make budget cuts mid-year. Thank you. Mr. Pitter? You get to do the happy presentation, right? Or the less unhappy.
Thank you, Chairman. As Rita relayed to y'all, I'm going to focus on the budget, and really I'm going to focus just on the revisions from the 09 adopted budget in June, this past June, to where we are today, and focus on those items. But I do want to give you a quick overview. Our budget, and you should have a copy of this in your package, which is our little budget document. But essentially, there are some differences between the six-year program and our budget, and primarily the budget is based on the actual expenditures that we're going to incur in the given year the budget is for, versus the six-year program is allocating funding resources to projects in that year. So it's sort of a cash timing of cash outflow issue versus allocating funding resources. That being said, our budget, the revised budget, does reflect decreases, which three main areas: the Transportation Trust Fund revenue decreases amounted to $14.6 million. They hit both the transit and the rail programs. We had administrative reductions of $1.4 million, and the in November 1st, the transfer of the toll road operations to the Metropolitan Washington Airports Authority. At that point, funding that potentially was going to flow through our financial system controls no longer was going to at that point. So based on that date and that signing of that agreement, there was a significant change in toll road funding, and then primarily Federal Transit Administration funding that now won't be going through our system of control. That being said, this graph is just, it's in your budget document, and you should be able to read a little better there, but this graph just depicts the expenditures by main area or main program, and I guess in comparison to prior times, the Metrorail project had been around 50% of our total program, and as, so to speak, the transition to MWAS has occurred, the funding level or the participation shown here in our budget is getting smaller. That's the main change, which in turn makes the rail program and the public transportation program percentage-wise appear larger, but dollar-wise they aren't necessarily larger. The next slide is mirror to the slide before, but this shows where the actual funding for our budget comes from. The sources, once again, the Transportation Trust Fund, and in particular the capital bond proceeds are a big portion of our funding at this point. And you'll notice it says general funds here. What that is the 2007 Transportation Initiative General Funds. It's the planned expenditures for fiscal year 2009 of those general funds. Next, I'll take y'all through just quickly the detail behind the decreases in each program. For public transportation, it was $12.4 million. This is all due to reductions in Transportation Trust Fund revenues, which flow through formulas as prescribed in the code. I think that was a question earlier. That's all 14.7% of those revenues flow to mass transit, and then from there it's allocated down the 73.5, 25, 1.5 that I stipulated earlier. This reduction did cause our operating share of eligible expenses to drop from 44% when we adopted in June to the 40%, as I stated the other day, which thankfully with the recordation tax being added this year, it could have been a lot worse than it is. And finally, rail programs, we had a $2.2 million reduction in the revenues there, which are motor vehicle rental taxes. They were also down to by this amount. And this reduction has been accounted for in the rail resource allocation plan that has been presented to y'all. As the first slide showed, the biggest reduction to the revised budget is in the Dulles Corridor Metrorail project, and this is really just a transfer of control of funding. It's not that funding has gone away. It's no longer going to flow through our system of financial control. With FTA funding of about $100 million a year, and then the toll road receipts themselves being now collected by the Airports Authority. I also do want to point out that the budget does include $125 million of capital project bonds for this project. And finally, the last area I wanted to touch on was the administrative reductions, which did total 15% of our total administrative budget, or $1.45 million. This included a reduction in our MEL, which did decrease our highway maintenance and operation funding by $250,000, which that's a portion of funding that comes off the top of the HMO funding. When DRPT was originally separated from VDOT back in 1992, I believe, there was funding provided from the VDOT budget to fund the operations of the agency at that point. Also, we scaled back the initiatives from the Appropriation Act. There's language in there that allows us to take a certain amount of funding from our revenues up to 3%. In the current year, we are 2.4%, and that amount, we went back, as I mentioned earlier, reduced it $500,000. And then also we reduced the special allocation funding. We went back through that list and found items that we were able to scale back for another a little over $700,000. And finally, I just wanted to point out, you know, today our admin budget now is about $8.8 million, which represents about 2.4% of our total funding that we oversee, and that's irrespective of the Dulles project. That's taken that out to do that calculation. And with that, that concludes my presentation. If there's questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Questions? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Pittard.
Thank you.
let's turn back to our resolutions in a moment. I'm going to start with Mr. Dickens for comments to go around the table. But while he's thinking about how to couch his remarks, I would like to see who would like to make a motion to take $2 billion out of our highway construction budget and to cancel over 800 construction projects.
Who would like to?
Mr. Starling, is there a motion? Is there a second? Mr. Poole? Okay. Mr. Dickens, comments before we vote.
I don't have any comments. So. Neither do I.
Mr. Keene?
We had unfunded, in 2002 we had unfunded and unmet needs, and we did 2025. V-Trans 2025 came up with $100 billion worth of needs just to upgrade the maintenance. And now we're going to meet today and cut out $162 million just on the maintenance side. Can I vote against this? I think I'll vote against this thing. Just being, it's just totally frustrating.
Mr. White?
Well, I agree a lot with the feelings expressed by Mr. Keene. There is a bright spot, and we've talked about this before when we look at what's happening in our rail program, because we get a much bigger bang for our buck out of rail travel and transporting rail freight by rail. So that part of the six-year plan is good. I think we're making great progress there. The rest of it, the source of funds for there are other surface transportation programs, is critically ill. And how we solve that, I think, is a question that none of us know the answer to. You know, obviously, the General Assembly doesn't know the answer to it. If we were unable to reach a compromise through our legislative process when times were good, it's not reasonable in my mind to expect that we're going to reach one when times are tough. And my feeling is we're probably going to have to live with a bare bones budget that's based upon the gas tax and automobile registrations for a long time to come. Which brings me back to the point I keep making, we need a new model, and I have no idea what that model should be, but I hope we'll continue to think about it.
Thank you. Mr. Badger? Commissioner? Did you want to acknowledge?
Yes, I do. I'd like some people to stand up if they're in the room for me, please. Craig? Monique? Bernie, Nancy, Karen, Carol, Laverne, she's not here, I'm sorry. This is the staff and the team that works with Diane, please, Diane, and Rita that have over the last 3.5 months gone through the public meetings, assembled the program, and brought this document to you in record time. Normally, in a budget year, it takes us 7 months to get through the process. These people, these professionals, working on weekends, nights, holidays, running the public process, being as transparent as they can be, put in nearly 600 hours of overtime to bring this together for you in 3.5 months. That's a Herculean effort, and believe me, when the Secretary mentioned the inconveniences for he and I on a couple of Sundays here and there, I can tell you I saw this going on all night long and all day long when they were assembling the document. I can't tell you how proud I am of these people and professionals that do this hard work, even in this difficult kind of circumstance. It's a real testimony in my mind to, even in crisis and the kinds of things that we're going through, when morale could really be down, these people know their job, they do their job, and they serve the Commonwealth with real distinction. So I'd like to take a moment and just congratulate them and give them a round of applause for this effort.
Thank you. Mr.
Chairman, I'd like to concur in what the Commissioner said. I also think it's a much broader appreciation. Certainly the district administrators have done yeoman's work in educating us. I know I have benefited from Jim Utterback's fairly constant communications, whether by email or in person, updating me constantly on the changes that have occurred and the challenges that we are going to continue to face. One of the interesting things, thanks to a budget item that is still there, the 29 Carter study has been underway. It's been fascinating to see fairly large turnouts of that study. That's an adjunct comment because a number of the comments focus on service, on concerns about our future ability to deliver. I think if you listen to the litany of comments we made at the last meeting, basically tagging onto the comments that Ken has made and others have made, I think there is a growing concern among the people in the Commonwealth about our ability to carry out our mission and why sufficient funds are not being provided to be able to allow VDOT to meet its requirements and citizen needs. So I think that's something that we need to make sure that we do respond to citizen concerns. We let them know that we are in reality doing more with less, and I think it's something we're going to be seeing an awful lot as we go through this process, at least over the next couple of years.
Thank you. Ms. Conley?
I'd like to kind of expand on what Mr. Davies just said, I appreciated from the array of public hearings that we've had recently, the testimony we've had, it has not been, as maybe one has heard in prior years, people with lovely ideas about things they would like to have. I think in many cases these were folks coming to present really very, very serious issues that they felt for the economy of their jurisdiction or their neighborhood or whatever it was. They were really very concerned, and they weren't asking for pie in the sky, but they were mightily chagrined at the fact that things were going to affect their community's economic vitality as well as their quality of life were kind of slipping away. And it was very moving to hear their comments and knowing that we could do very little to avert this. Specifically, I'm very sad about not being able to help transit at a time when it really needs a boost. And also that our construction budget, particularly for that primary, rural, and secondary, is decimated. And then I find it ironic that when maintenance comes first, as I think it does logically and also by code, we're not even putting it first. We're having to reduce it by a significant amount. I remember 4 years ago when we were very happy, we thought it was realistic to come with a 4% annual increase in maintenance because we'd done detailed studies that showed that that was the real cost. We're increasing at least that amount, and we went from 3% to 4%. Progress. Now we're back again to 3%, and who knows whether we'll be able to keep ourselves at that, and that's our top priority. So it's not a happy day. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bowie.
Our painful reductions and shortfalls are very typical of the economic crisis the whole nation is suffering. I'm grateful that our state government is responsible enough to insist on balanced budgets. I wish our federal government would do the same. But we have done what has to be done. We need to take our licks and move on, do the best we can with what we've got.
Thank you. Mr. Martin?
Well, reality is what it is, and I appreciate Mr. Davis for covering the gist of the comments I would have wanted to make. The only thing that he left out was that the commissioner made me feel more comfortable because I had sort of focused in on the equipment purchase, eliminating, and I was about to say, well, now, you know, you eliminate this much, but how much were you planning to spend? But you covered the philosophy that I was worried about with that. I know how hard it can be not to be penny-wise and dollar-dumb when the dumbness emanated from a whole different level and a far distant time.
Mr. Coleman.
Mr. Chairman. When people look back at this time, I think they will be amazed and somewhat confounded. Never have so few cut so much so quickly. But in a larger sense, they'll be confounded by the seeming inability of a group of people who have with responsibilities to really wrestle more positively with the challenges that we face here. I too have a lot of positive feelings and comments for the department, for its professionalism, for the commissioner's professional leadership and his demand for it from all those he interacts with. I think we've been blessed with a secretary of transportation and an administration of a governor who have really tried harder than almost any other team I've known to accomplish something, to do it creatively, to do it imaginatively, to do it despite the hurdles that have been continuously placed in their way. I have a lot of respect for the governor's own proposals and his own energy on this set of issues, his determination to keep it before the Commonwealth. I also have a lot of respect for his ability to bring the President of the United States to Virginia twice in recent weeks to argue for an investment strategy that we know we need, not only in transportation, but in other parts of our infrastructure. And for a resident of Springfield, Virginia, it's absolutely awesome that he was standing there at Springfield, Virginia, at the mouth of one of our most important projects in Fairfax County and in Northern Virginia, along the 95 corridor, where those 8,000 plus jobs will be delivered to the engineering proving ground at Fort Belvoir. And I also wondered why I wasn't invited, but I just live right over there, not today. Not now, quickly. But I just want to say, that's the kind of effort it's going to take. The numbers aren't really good now, obviously. But even if the numbers get better, it's still going to take the same amount of serious intent for us to do the best we can with what are still going to be very limited resources going forward. I think we probably need to understand what President Obama really meant when he said we've kicked this can down the road and now we've arrived at the end of the road. And that's the way I feel about it. This probably has to be the bottom of our experience here as a board. But we need to be even more responsible moving ahead. And then finally, we may have a new definition to speak less of FRANS, and now really we're reduced to talking about federal revenue anticipation plans. Because really what we have now, as you've said many times, is a federally funded program. And I don't know that that's what the Commonwealth of Virginia or the CTB set out to accomplish. So we need to regain our feet. We need to be ready to respond responsibly. We need to deliver on the expectations that the people of Virginia have for their transportation networks and for the quality of their lives. I don't think any of us here can afford to disappoint Virginia.
Thank you. Ms. Sterling?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I'd like to echo what Mr. Bowie said. We're faced with a tough decision, tough economic environment, tough fiscal realities. At least we in Virginia face up to those realities when they're presented to us. We're required and I think duty-bound to put forward a budget that reflects the revenues available to us. Nobody likes the cuts that have to be made, but fortunately it's something that at least our forefathers here in Virginia saw the wisdom in putting together a form of government that would ensure we did not burden our children further. We're going to take these cuts. Hopefully down the road we'll be able to add funds back when the economic environment returns. Hopefully it'll come back to the levels that it was, but if it does not, we'll just have to set priorities accordingly. In response to Mr. Coulomb's question as to why he wasn't invited, I understand he might be on the Secret Service watch list for his blogging, so you may want to check on that. With that, let's go forward.
Well, thank you. And I just would like to, as a personal note, on behalf of the governor, who has spent three regular sessions, two special sessions, probably in excess of 60 public meetings going out to talk about this issue. I have stood at a podium, been asked questions of where's your plan, why is this happening. I can show you charts in my office that we displayed for the last 2 years with rapidly declining red lines. And this is not unpredictable. We are here as a consequence of inaction, plain and simple. For me, historically, my father was a World War II veteran. Most of the bridges and infrastructure we're talking about were built by his greatest generation. We have not done them honor because we have not taken care of it. And I think this is a sad day. So there's a motion and a second before the board. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
It deserves a
vote, not on the basis of the preparation of the plan, but it deserves a no vote that is just not adequate to address the needs of the state of Virginia.
Action item two on the agenda is action on the FY09 budget for both the Department of Rail and Public Transportation and the Department of Transportation.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Okay, we have two other items under new business. The first, Dr. Mary Lynn Tischer will be here and unable to present the latest information on the stimulus package. Oh, Commissioner, are you going to?
Mr. Chairman, members, I will be a poor substitute for Dr. Fisher, who has been following for the Secretary and the departments the development and the various generations of the components of the final stimulus bill that will be before the President shortly as we move forward. I will try to give you in this set of overheads that broad stroke, what do we understand the bill to contain as it is moving to final passage and signature. There are several general elements in the legislation that are have stood quite a bit of the oversight throughout the generations of the bill. 100% federal share, so these are not matching projects. The supplemental funding that comes from the bill, there is federal oversight of the program, which is a major feature to ensure that the money achieves the goals intended, which will include audits and oversight and investigations necessary, and there is no earmarking. The funding levels, the second major piece, is coming from the conference committee's deliberations now show this breakdown for transportation. $47.9 billion for transportation in aggregate, with $27.5 billion for highways, $8.4 billion for public transportation, $8 billion for high-speed rail, $1.3 for aviation, and a grant program established at $1.5 billion under the administration of the Secretary of Transportation, which is on your next slide. Dr. Tischer broke this down for us to the elements of how that program is intended to work. It's a competitive program for projects of significant impact on national, metro area, or regional, national, or regional impact. $200 million of the $1.5 billion will come from TIFIA. The program will be administered by the Secretary. Eligible projects, as you can see, are listed. The criteria for eligible projects. And very frankly, I'll try not to comment on the motives or the intent, since she's followed that conversation in the various committees, so I'm not conversant with it at that point. The distribution of that grant program is outlined on this slide, focusing around geographically equitable urban and rural balance. Each grant not less than $20 million or greater than $300 million. However, the Secretary does have the right to waive the grant side. Not more than 20% of the $1.5 billion can go to a single state, and the five criteria listed require an additional share. Priority is given to projects that require an additional share of federal funds to complete an overall funding package, are to be completed within 3 years of enactment, Secretary has to publish the final criteria by which project selection will occur within 90 days. The applications will need to be complete within 180 days after publication, and projects selected within a year of enactment of those rules.
Commissioner, the unlike when we get to the highway funds, which are very formula-based, and so we know pretty much how much we would receive and we can allocate accordingly, there's 1.5 that's sort of up for grabs amongst the states. We know the max we can get is 300, but there's no minimum. Do we have a plan? Do we have a, have we identified projects? What's our plan for going after what I'll say is the maximum amount we can get here of $300 million? I see.
The emphasis here is obviously on multimodal, so we will be looking at, for example, port or rail or highway connections, say, among different modes, and that is some of the informal suggestions that Secretary LaHood has indicated that he would be interested in receiving applications. So, for example, in Virginia, we have two ongoing projects like the rail link to the Port of Virginia or the Dulles Rail extension in the Dulles Corridor, the link projects. Those would be two present-day examples of those kinds of projects.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. As we look then to the specific modal breakdowns that are within the bill, the stimulus package, the highway formula, obviously, as you recall, is the largest number. 50% of those funds will flow through the STP formula. STP formula, as Dr. Tischer has noted, is 25% is based on lane miles, 40% PMT, 30%, 35% tax payments. 50% overall share of funding is in the 2008 obligation limitation. And I got to look to somebody else to see what was the intent of that language. Are they limiting the amount of obligation authority in the first wave, or don't we know yet? All right. It's a question that we'll have to come back to because it's an obvious question. Is there a meter on the money is the question. Priority to projects within the highways mode,
there's a meter on the money, yeah.
Thank you. That's how you give a speech, as you do it on the fly. Priority to projects that can be completed within 3 years are in economically distressed areas. That's a per capita income of 80% of the national average. Unemployment rate is at least 1% higher, or the Secretary determines it is or will be an economic special need. And then the funding, he has to apportion the funding within 21 days. These two maps we've included.
Could you identify which secretary?
Reference here is all to the U.S. DOT secretary.
Correct.
I wish I had that authority.
We'll give it to you.
Would have been a much nicer answer, I guess. Just for your reference in your presentation, we've included two maps that capture those economic priority criteria that I just outlined. The first map shows you areas with per capita income in the Commonwealth of at least 80% of the U.S. Per capita income. And the second shows you those areas by unemployment rates that would meet the criteria.
Was Senator Reynolds part of drawing this map? He was a write-on, wasn't he?
He would, but just a comment here, as is often the case with any piece of legislation, there are competing interests. So the previous slide talked about an STP formula, which is largely population-driven, which goes in one direction. In Virginia, economically disadvantaged goes in another direction. So our job will be to balance those competing interests.
So since Newport News is in green, I get it all?
You can certainly make that case, Mr. West.
You get your parent.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll continue. if less than 50% of the funds are obligated within 120 days of enactment, the portion of the unobligated, that the portion of the unobligated, 50% will be redistributed. That's significantly changed from where we started 3 weeks ago with this legislation. So, and it reinforces the impact of how the rules are shifting before we got to selecting out the projects that were eligible. Redistribution of any unobligated balances will occur after a year. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Pardon me. Dave, do we know what obligated means yet? Is that under contract, or is that, we just don't know that yet?
No, obligated carries the federal definition that we use in our normal programs, which is the Federal Highway Administration, in this case, is obligated the funds, authorize the funds to the project. It does not necessarily mean that you have broken ground.
Okay. Does it mean you have to have a contract at that stage?
No, the Federal Highway Administration has obligated money to the project.
Wait, this gets interesting.
Yeah.
So we have to make selections and then wait for the federal highways to hopefully get around to obligating it to the selections we've made within 120 days, or federal highways takes all our money.
Could take all.
That's an interesting or interpretation 50%. Of what could happen.
So it is on the burden is on federal highways to make the actual administrative action, but failure to do so, the impact is on us.
That could be an interpretation. I can tell you from our personal relationships with our division administrator, he is highly motivated and has stressed to both the chief engineer and myself his commitment to act rapidly.
So let's assume, take a scenario where you and the staff have been working for several months and identifying where we would apply such funds, be able to commit them quickly, and next week a project, or maybe it goes to the month after, a list comes to us on this is how we would do it, we authorize it. From that point in time, how long, by what we've historically seen, would it take federal highways to obligate those funds? Just if such a scenario was out there.
Their normal process, according to staff, is about 15 working days.
So, okay. We're well with them.
We could always lend them Barbara Lee's if they need help.
True. Mr. Bowie.
The application has to be made within 180 days after criteria publication. Do you have any idea when the criteria will be published?
That's for the competitive grant program. That language applied, as I read the slides, to the $1.5 billion that's competitive grant. When you get to the normal highways portion of the stimulus, STP distributes it. These are limiters to ensure that we use the money rapidly then within the distributed formula. And so those are the issues that we are now starting to address in terms of project selection and processing.
Mr. Bowie, your concern was about the nationwide pot that everybody has to compete for. What the commissioner is talking about here is money that is pushed out to the state through an allocation and an apportionment process.
Correct. Thank you. The U.S. DOT secretary does retain the ability to extend the date of the redistribution. So in other words, he can not redistribute, but he does have to notify the appropriations committees before he suspends that option. 3% of the funds, highway funds, I'm using the STP formula, that'd be it's 10% off that percentage. So about 3% are dedicated or focused toward enhancements.
Now this one kind of presents another challenge. Do we have to make decisions on specific enhancement projects within the 120 days? Does it carry a separate mechanism? I mean, this is something that traditionally has taken some time as you review and evaluate proposals.
That's an interesting question and one I can't answer for you right now.
So we better be. So we would have to do a quick turnaround on, and would that be enhancement projects that have been submitted for this year, or do we need to go back and look at those that were submitted last year.
The enhancement process that we go through is a discretionary choice to go
right.
through that. There are certain categories. I think we need to look at the eligibility. Personally, I think where we are, there probably is not time to go through a process, but we need to go through that with a little bit more care and diligence.
Mr. Chairman,
we have a
stack of unfunded or not
right.
not completely funded enhancement projects that could this be eligible under that. For example, we've funded 50% of a project and they're waiting 4 or 5 years before they can get the total to actually complete the project. Therefore, I think we could bring all of our enhancement projects.
That is a distinct possibility, but let us go back and look at the rules and see about that. And I will say just we have to remember we just cut $2 billion out of a budget, and our priorities are deficient pavements, deficient bridges, and projects that have been cut. Some of those may relate. We have to be very, very cautious about not just the substance, but the appearance and the use of these funds. So let's treat this one very carefully. But it's an excellent question as to what kind of process do we have to go through for the use of those enhancement funds. Remember that again, the congressional intent here is jobs.
Very frankly, I think these are, as the Secretary has indicated, these are very beneficial perspectives for us to hear. Because very frankly, as we've testified several times, there are some nuances in these rules that challenge some of our traditional thought process, particularly as it comes to speed and timing in our traditional process. So these are good questions, very frankly. 30% of the funding dedicated to the highways portion is sub-allocated according to population. To population portion of the Surface Transportation Act. That's the 200,000.
That's for the urban. I know in the legislation it talks about money sub-allocated to urban areas. So
yes.
If in this we allocate projects or we are looking, whatever portion we get that would go to urban projects does not kick up into that 50% or would not be under that.
That's my
so that 30%, which we know would go to
correct.
Urban projects. Is that correct? So 30% of whatever we get for highway has to go to urban projects, and that amount, which would be, I don't know, a little over 200,000, would not be subject to 50% take back if we don't
obligate. It's not subject to the 50%. Reading from this and what I think I understand, it's not subject to the 50% obligation within 120 days because it's not subject to redistribution after 120 days. So what originally there were provisions in several versions of the bill that would have pulled it back, given it back to the state, or lose
right.
it. And so it appears that that language has been modified, or that proposal has been modified. I can't answer the question you're going to ask, Mr. Rick.
I'm not going to ask it. I've never been
Remember,
good
no
numbers.
Earmarks.
$60 million.
These are competitive ferries. Remember, there's no earmarks in this bill.
When I saw this in the write-up, I scratched my head and said, I don't know the answer to that question.
That's the one someplace that's 59.9 billion.
Again, priority to all projects funded. There's priority to be completed within the 2 years. There's a normal. There are apportionments within the highway portion of the bill for Indian reservations, federal land, park roads, forest highways, and refuge roads. And that's consistent with the way the Congress normally handles the regular funding bills, the safety lieu type bills. There is also $20 million for disadvantaged business enterprise bonding assistance, which is a very strong provision and a very important one. Then the other portions of the bill, and if Mr. Badger is all right, I'll continue to speak on his behalf. Railroad high speed, $8 billion for high speed rail corridor program.
It appears that that funding is available until October of 2012. Within 60 days, the U.S. DOT Secretary needs to submit to the Appropriations Committees a strategic plan for spending this funding. Within 120 days, he has to issue interim guidance to applicants. So it appears that this is intended to be the competitive program. Guidance to have separate instructions for high-speed rail or high-speed corridor program, capital assistance for intercity passenger rail grants and congestion grants. And it does not need to be in a state rail plan, which is kind of an interesting feature.
How are we interpreting that? I mean, does that, you know, this is kind of the leading language. Is that leading us to a corridor that Virginia would be involved with?
Mr. Chairman, there's a lot of mystery about this particular item in the bill. It went from a much lower level of authorization to $8 billion, which surprised a lot of folks. They refer to at least three different programs in here, the high-speed corridor program, capital assistance for intercity passenger rail service grants, which is a program that exists but it's only received $30 million nationwide before, and something that I'm not even sure what it means, and that's a congestion grant. But there's a lot of unknowns to this program. We are well positioned in Virginia because we are part of the Northeast Corridor. It does extend down to Richmond. And we do have a lot of projects that we can submit applications for. We do have a state rail plan. They don't require that, but I think we'll be at some advantage in having all our projects set out in a statewide plan.
Plus, we have a good record of solving problems with multiple unknowns.
The rail portion of the program does include funding for Amtrak for grants to repair and improve the trackage, I would assume, in that, if I'm not mistaken. That money will be available through September of 2010. Again, no funding to be used to subsidize operating. They must award within 30 days, must be completed within 2 years. No more than 60% of the non-security funds can be used for capital projects along the Northeast Corridor. Public transportation, Chip, I'm assuming you've been kind of monitoring this language also.
Maybe we'll do that up
again. Yeah.
One thing the commissioner didn't point out is this language just came out this afternoon, so the fact that Mary Lynn has a presentation on it is quite impressive. I was reading it right before I came up here, so there are a lot of things still to be answered on this. On the public transportation program, they have $6.9 billion available. They've come up with a special program of $100 million for discretionary grants, projects to reduce energy or greenhouse gas emissions. 80% of the money goes through the formula program, 10% through the rural formula, and 10% through the state formula they came up with a few years ago for growing states and high density. This level is lower than either the House or the Senate version that you may have seen the table on earlier, so that the money's down a bit. They do have a requirement that the funds be apportioned by FTA within 21 days, so everyone will know what their amounts are. And they do have the same requirement that 50% must be obligated within 180 days. And if you haven't obligated it, then it goes back for redistribution to other transit agencies or other states. The remaining balance must be obligated within a year or redistributed. The Secretary may extend the notice to the Appropriation Committees. There is money for the Fixed Skagway Modernization Program. This is the money that goes to existing mass transit operators such as Metro Rail and, of course, systems in Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, and elsewhere. It's the program that goes by formula and is distributed for improvements to the fixed skyway systems. This is a bit less than the original proposal, It's also going to be apportioned within 21 days, and they have the same requirements of using 50% of it within 180 days. There's also $750 million for the new STARTS program that must be obligated within 150 days. You want to take a whack at aviation?
Mr. Chairman, on this these discretionary grants to reduce energy and greenhouse gas emissions, could any of that be used? Is it assumed this is all capital, or can,
yes,
it's all
of the amount of allocated to aviation, $1.3 billion, $200 million of that is for FAA infrastructure, as you can see it listed under the bullet that Dr. Tischer gave us. Priority to projects and activities to be completed within 2 years of enactment, and the administrator needs to publish procedures for applying, reviewing, and awarding the grants, including a form of application within 60 days.
Maybe I shouldn't ask this question because
we
have aviation in here.
Yeah.
Isn't it the state in the normal program that is looking at airport facilitization that does that, or does that come from individual airport authorities?
The aviation grants are not unlike the grant requests that come into DRPT. There's a federal distribution formula and a generalized pot. A portion goes to the commercial airports, but the vast majority of it goes to the general aviation. The major commercial airports get direct funds directly from the Federal Aviation Administration.
So I'm trying to figure out how this would differ from the normal system. Are the states going to apply? Do local authorities apply? Does this money go to the local authorities, or does it go to the state for distribution by project to the local? This
unclear here. We'll probably need to research that. Under the normal course of business, the grants for the general aviation airports come to the aviation board.
I'm sure Randy's already out there doing his grant request.
My sense is, and I think her implication with the FAA infrastructure may mean that that's, or that portion of it is directly through FAA.
Well, the FAA infrastructure is like, that's the equipment and some of the other things, but into it in the second page here as well.
The second page is the issue. I think it's where your questions apply, which is the grants to aid for airports. That's the majority of the $1.3 billion at $1.1 for airport development, soundproofing, runway incursion and prevention. And then the priority for projects, the 50% provided in grants within 120 days of enactment, and the remaining amount remains available for a year.
So as I read this as written, and I may be incorrect, the $200 million would be airports directly apply to the FAA. The $1.1 goes through the normal process of
that would be
where the states allocate it based on...
Let us pose that to the Department of Aviation and get back to you all.
The last is $100 million for maritime grants to qualifying shipyards obligated within 180 days.
And this is an earmark, so we'll be competitive.
I didn't see any application criteria. There are Buy America provisions contained within the legislation. I think she was trying to highlight some key issues. These are... the same Buy America provisions that we operate under if the language remained at the same as I had seen it previously under our current program.
Is it 25% the same?
I believe there's the chief engineer.
Thank you. So the 23, it's not the traditional Buy America, but it's the 23 USC Buy America.
Correct.
Okay.
There is the certification of state level of effort. Within 30 days of enactment, the governor shall certify the state will maintain its effort and funding with regard to state funding. The governor is required to submit a statement identifying the amount of funds the state planned to expend as of enactment date, critical provisions, from non-federal sources in the period beginning on the date of enactment through September 30th of 2010.
And Commissioner, just to the earlier presentation, the House version of this had a retroactive date saying that we had to maintain our expenditures at the October 1 level, which clearly we could not do and would not have been able to qualify for any of the stimulus funding. And so the Senate basically had a self-certification procedure. Their compromise is maintain funding as of date of enactment, which is the president's signature, probably on Monday. So today's action is very, very important.
The last couple of slides before the chief engineer answers questions really deal with reporting. And this was very significant in the program. There was much discussion around the importance to ensure that the funding and the projects get into the mainstream. So there are reporting requirements at 90 days, 180 days, 1 year, second year, and third year. And each recipient must submit periodic reports to include the items that you see listed. And you can very clearly see the thrust and the importance of the economic stimulus reporting that is contained within the legislation. And very frankly, I think this will lead to some very good improvements and enhancements in normal course of doing business as well. As a reminder, as we move forward and think about where this money will spend, I wanted to draw your attention to two additional maps that relate to you the condition of the system in the Commonwealth. On numerous occasions, we have testified now about the map that you see in front of you on pavement condition and how the pavement condition is eroding on us at about 1% a year. Today, we are at about 21%. Rated in red, or the, I think that's purple and red. And our goal and our performance expectation for the Commonwealth is at 18%. So that is a significant piece I want to leave with you as we think about the actual projects that will be funded as we move forward. Secondly, I wanted to remind the board of the scatter plot of these 1,930 bridges that are structurally deficient in the Commonwealth as depicted on this slide. They are wide, they are well spread, they are critical parts of our infrastructure, and while they are not all in need of replacement, they are all in need of attention. And our inspection program will keep us well protected as we address these structures. However, I think you've reflected your commitment to structures and pavements within the program that we have remodeled for you and that you have adopted today and will be a focus of our future discussions.
Dave, going back to page 6, where priorities to be given to projects in economically distressed areas, I look at the map of the pavement condition, and just a brief look at it indicates that the pavement conditions in the economically distressed areas are not in bad shape compared to other areas of the state. Now, there are a number of bridges, I suppose, there. But what is our current thinking of how we're going to deal with that? If the priorities are supposed to be for the economically distressed areas, What is our current thinking of how we're going to approach that?
Silence at the podium. Mr. White, as I suggested before, you've got a lot of competing interest even within this legislation. So one thing says largely a population-based distribution formula. Another says economically disadvantaged areas. I'm sure as we peel the onion back, we'll find probably half a dozen other priorities. It'll be our job to balance those, just as we do with the six-year program. I think the my guess, again, without having read it in detail, because this has just been printed and still printing in some places, it's a thick bill, is that ultimately some kind of population, broad population distribution is going to ultimately determine an allocation. But again, there are going to be unmet needs in pavement, in deficient bridges. We don't have to deal here with the transit allocations. Those go directly to the major properties. And by the way, this is a outstanding bill, particularly, you know, we've been talking about state of good repair for the metro system, for VRE, and there's some significant benefit for the Hampton Roads transit providers. And because the feds only do transit capital, they don't do operating, it tends to favor some of the larger and more capital-intensive systems, their funding formulas. That said, I think what we need to do as a body, and I would encourage the entire board to do that, is where we know we have some significant holes in our maintenance budget, 3% versus 4%. We've gone backwards on pavement conditions. What are some of our needs in terms of deficient bridges and things that can be obligated and under contract? Because remember, the push from Congress is to get jobs, so we do not want projects that will languish. And I think all those things come together in a set of common sense recommendations based on your input through your district administrators, and we may get an additional set of priorities layered on this by the General Assembly. They are in session and are looking at a budget exercise. This may be part of their discussion. So the rules change on a daily basis, if not an hourly basis.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate the opportunity to give you this quick first flash glance. More to be said.
Commissioner, could you, while you're there, talk a little bit about reauthorization? Because there is an interrelationship, and I know you've been heavily engaged. Mr. Tucker was a chair and still is a chair of one of the reauthorization committees for APTA. But it's important to understand this is one-time funding.
Correct.
It's
kind of interesting as I've watched the events and the discussion going on, and I get the question quite frequently from my staff now as I'm going around talking to the department staff around our future and blueprint, and does the stimulus solve all our problems? And very frankly, as I look at it, the conversation around the reauthorization or the authorization that needs to occur in October is really suspended for the last couple of months as people tried to get their arms around this stimulus package, get it shaped, do the right thing. It is absolutely and obviously a critical, needed first step on the next step, which has to deal with the reauthorization of Safe T-Loop. That bill expires September 30th of this year. The associations, the states, a variety of groups, we have two commission reports that have established a strong framework of what is needed for transportation in the long term, both in volume of funding, streamlining of programs, in focus of programs as we move into that next six-year window. So it is now, I believe, that the debate will take on some new life around how do we get to that bill rapidly. If the thing I hope for as a professional in the business is that if the stimulus package can be pulled together and galvanized this quickly, we should hopefully be able to do the same thing with the authorization package coming into the end of the federal fiscal year. I think there is a new mood and a new tone that says we can do this, and that is where I hold my long-term hope, as we make the right changes and the structural changes that you've encouraged us to make within our business at VDOT. So I would anticipate now, starting in about, I have meetings the end of February in D.C., of 23rd, 24th, that should renew the discussion at that point. So coming into our spring meetings, I should be able to report quite a bit of activity.
Okay. Any other questions or comments, Mr. Kuhlman?
I appreciate the summary that you've given us, and I do think it's an advantage that we're physically close to the federal government. We understand these processes, I think, with you, because of your connections, your efforts, our own elected officials. I think we anticipate that we can understand this complexity better than a lot of other states, and we've always been able to take advantage of things, so I hope we'll be looking for those opportunities. I do want to just share with my colleagues, however, that even though we may be looking potentially at somewhere between $700 to $800 million, as I understand it, perhaps,
maybe a little bit less.
That I have in front of me now a list of 20 projects in Northern Virginia that are ready to go and could use every one of those dollars. Now, I'm not saying that's what we're going to do, of course. All I'm saying is each of our districts has pent-up needs that are ready to go. So the one-time funding will be tremendously helpful, but it won't clear my list, and it won't clear your list. So we do have to put some emphasis on going forward what that federal legislation is going to be. I had another question. Last year we received our prioritizing the state highway plan process. Where are we in that process? And is that potentially a... Am I wrong here?
I'm afraid it was a board meeting I wasn't at.
Okay.
But VTRAN's 2035 activities?
Well, I'll have to go refine my question, I suppose, to see what I'm talking about. We can talk about that later.
Absolutely.
What I mean is we have processes underway that could potentially feed and track that same process at the federal level as well. But what priorities there are, what needs to be done, how the revenue system needs to be overhauled.
In terms of the construct of the new federal legislation, yes. VTRAN, and a lot of the focus in the VTRAN's effort that Deputy Secretary Davis has been carrying forward for us, those discussion papers, these kind of comments are all feeding into that very same discussion that the associations and the states are having also.
Okay, any other questions of the Commissioner? If not, there was one other, just a brief item I wanted for discussion is an update on state legislation. Is Mr. Walton here? I guess he's gone. Anybody have any legislative issues? I did want to highlight one for discussion that we were talking about earlier, which is the transit funding. There is also some budget language, which I think needs some tweaking, which gets, in my judgment, a little bit more into micromanagement of VDOT than is appropriate. But I'm wondering if you all have any legislative issues or concerns that you're hearing in your individual communities.
Mr. Chairman, I have one. There's increasing discussion now that it's passed the House of the legislation that would begin to dedicate a percentage of new revenues to transportation, revenues that traditionally have flowed into the general fund and for purposes. What is your assessment of that piece of legislation in the Senate side? Oh, maybe not your assessment.
No.
Well, Mr. Kuhlman, if I may say, I've appeared now four times before a committee to express our deep opposition to that legislation. One of the reasons why Virginia is a AAA state is because, just as we do in transportation, the Commonwealth does a six-year revenue and expenditure forecast. And what the bill does is it purports to capture growth, but that growth is already factored into the long-range forecast. So it is taking money directly out of the general fund, out of healthcare, out of education, and purporting to put it into transportation. The reality, as we know from harsh experience, one, that is always subject to annual appropriation by the General Assembly, and two, every time we have tried to put general fund dollars into transportation, it has turned around and bit us hard. I can go back to the Virginia Transportation Act of 2000, where general fund promises were made in the hundreds of millions of dollars. An economic downturn came around, and we were forced to sell several hundred million dollars of federal revenue anticipation notes to plug that hole. We're still paying off that debt. More recently, General Assembly, the governor recommended, the General Assembly approved $500 million of general fund surplus to put transportation. Last year there was an economic downturn. What are we doing? We are attempting to sell $185 million worth of bonds, again financed through transportation revenues, to pay for that. The point is that transportation requires stable, predictable, dedicated, reliable funding sources. If you don't have that, you don't have a transportation funding program. And if I were asked if that bill passed today and it was effective today, could we program anything beyond the current fiscal year? The answer to that is no. So I would say there is good reason to oppose the legislation. I think its chances are weak in the Senate, and weaker should it make to the governor's desk. Transit funding, I would like to comment. In the six-year program, we have the flexibility to address the issue of operational funding. The amendment that has been adopted in virtually identically between the House and the Senate is a very divisive amendment that we oppose. And what it does is it takes money out of capital and puts it into operating. What that does is to take money away from systems and those which are capital intensive, so Metro, VRE, one day the Norfolk Light Rail program, and put it into operations. And we oppose that for two reasons. It is just like shortchanging highway maintenance. All we're doing is pushing our accrued liabilities down the road for transit. And secondly, it is creating a division where we now have transit properties trying to take money away from each other. That's not a healthy environment. And so what we had suggested as a third way, and Mr. Badger and his team have come up with a proposal, because there are some small systems that are going to be facing service reductions as a consequence of shrinking local as well as state revenues. A lifeline grant, we set that up a couple years ago, and we would replicate that same process for those who are truly looking at a service reduction. We won't obviously do that if the General Assembly chooses to go ahead with the current funding formula, but it really does pit transit system against transit system, and is a disappointing amendment. There are some properties that are experiencing very real operational issues, and the test of that is, do they really have to reduce service or not? And that's what the lifeline grants would provide a safety net for. Any other questions or issues? Anything under new business? If not, the meeting is adjourned, and please keep February 19th on your calendars. I believe we will have a need to meet at that time. Thank you very much.